Starting off with Parshas Devarim.
Perek Aleph Pasuk Aleph Eila Hadvarim Asher Diber Moshe Al Kol Yisrael Be'Ever Yarden. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Yisrael across the Yarden, or on the other side of the Yarden, on the side that on the eastern side by Jordan. By Midbar Ba'arav Al Mol Suf Bein Paran Ubein Tofel Ve'Lavan Ve'Chatzeros Ve'Dizahav. It's supposed to be like sort of a, where are we? So it's telling you, in the Midbar, in the desert, around the plains, opposite Yam Suf, which is, by the way, this is nowhere near Yam Suf. If you look at a map, we're not talking anywhere near Yam Suf, this is by the Yarden River. Between Paran and Tophel, and Lavan and Chatzeros V'Dizahav, Rashi tells us that all these things are referring to different chatoim, different sins that Bnei Yisrael did. Each one represents a different chait that they did, something that they had done wrong, and something that they had to fix up, something that they had to do tshuva for. So each one stands for a different thing. Now, funnily enough, there are only seven things mentioned in this pasuk, even though there's a lot of different words. By Midbar is that they angered HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Midbar, and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they said, how can you, if only you would let us die when we were still in Mitzrayim. Mol Ba'arava is referring to Baal Pa'or. Mol Suf is that they argued on the Yam Suf, and they said, let's go back to Mitzrayim. Bein Paran is the Meraglim. Bein Tofel V'Lavan refers to the Mun. They complained about the Mun. Chatzerus is Korach Adas Korach. Dizahav refers to the Egel Azav. Why does he give the Musar as a remiss? Why hint to it? Why not just say it straight out? You guys screwed up. You screwed it all up. Everything got messed up because of you. And you. And you. Well, probably because us were going to fall on. Why didn't it just say, you messed up, you messed up, you messed up? What's the big deal that he has to do it in a remiss, in a hinting form, and say it in such a way that's going to be confusing? There's bound to be a guy there that's going to get up there and be like, what's he talking about? Well, why is he? He's not talking to me. He's talking about Tophel. I don't even know what Tophel is. I've never even heard of that place. Why didn't he say it straight out to Bnei Yisrael to tell them everything? So Miam Lois explains it with a story. And by the way, we should also do the Rashi's over here. Rashi says at the very end, his skirim berem is b'nei kvod anshal Yisrael, because of the kavod of Bnei Yisrael, to give them a little bit of kavod. What is this kavod, and what's the point, what's the reason why we have to worry about this kavod of Bnei Yisrael? What's that kavod all about? The next Rashi says, ilu hochiach miksasan, if you would have only given Moshe to a few of them, hayu elu shebishuk omrin, those guys who were in the marketplace, they would have said, oh, atema yisim shomim mi ben amram, v'lo shibusim davar. You heard it from them, but you didn't say anything. Ilu if we were there, we would have answered him back. We would have gotten him back. What in the world could you have said back? What could they have said back to all these things? They did the Egel Azav. They did the Meraglim. They did all these things. They complained about the Mun. They complained about at the Yamsuf. They did all these things. What could they have done to, I don't know, to ease the pain of everything they had, the things that they had done wrong? So Rabbi Yamlo always explains with the story. Explains why it had to be beremez, why it had to be hinted to it. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was dying. Apparently the story is in the Zohar. I have not seen the Zohar, but the Rabbi Yamlo always does quote it down. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was dying. He's passing away. He was with him was Reb Chia, Reb Pinchas Ben Yair. Reb Pinchas Ben Yair was his son-in-law, and Reb Yavo. They were standing around his bed. All of a sudden, as they were standing there, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, lying down in his bed, disappeared. He wasn't there in front of them anymore. He just disappeared. And they tried to move to go see what happened to him. They found themselves frozen in place. Frozen solid. And they couldn't move a muscle. They couldn't move a bone. Nothing. They couldn't move anything at all. Standing there not being able to do anything. After about an hour, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai came back with the smell of Gan Eden. The smell of Gan Eden came back with him. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai reappeared and started speaking to no one that they could see. There was no one around. He started speaking to everyone. All of a sudden they were able to move around already, and they could say, you know, like, Rebbe, what just happened? What just happened to us? Shimon Bar Yochai told them, the Shekhinah came. And the Shekhinah, if you're a great tzaddik, takes you up from the place where you are, brings you up from the place where you are, and brings you to the next world, to Gan Eden, to show you your makom in Gan Eden. So it took me, took my neshama, took all of me, because I am my neshama, my goof became my neshama, bring me up all the way up to where I was supposed to go, all the way up in Shemayim, took me to my spot, and the spot that is reserved for me up there in Shemayim, and afterward, I was malava back down. They brought me back down. I guess it took an hour. They were Lava and brought down with 300 neshamos from Gan Eden. The 300 neshamos from Gan Eden came down with them to be able to greet him all the way down to be Malava and back onto earth. As I came back down, Adam Arishon spoke to me. And Adam Arishon said to me, "Be mechase on my chait. Don't tell anyone about my chait. I don't want it well known to other people about what I did." So the Miyam Lois doesn't really explain it. But the explanation is as follows, according to what I've learned. The pshat is that what Adam Arishon was saying was, I didn't sin. There's no such thing as a sin of admiration. It's not like admiration saw a tree one day and he's like, wow, grapes. What did God do? Yeah, I'm good. Just go ahead and start eating them. It's not like all of a sudden admiration just went up to it, had a huge taiva for a candy, and just couldn't hold himself back and just reached into his pocket and said, all right, I'm going to take the candy, I'm going to eat it right now. He doesn't have our problems of being able to, I can't keep Kol Av Yisrael because I got to have Chips Ahoy cookies. He didn't have that type of a problem. We had no such issue, like something like that. His issue was something totally different. Some type of unbelievable problem, which we can't imagine, which is unbelievable beyond anybody. So what Adam Rishon was saying is, I had reasons for what I was doing. There was good reasons for why I sinned. Don't think and don't tell anyone that I sinned. That's not the right thing to say. Akrikach. Ramosha Feinstein says about Avram Avinu that there's a Ramban that says that Avram Avinu did five sins, five chatayim. Ramosha Feinstein holds it's all forgery. There's no way Ramosha ever wrote that. He holds it's mamash a forgery. I had a friend who saw the original printing of the Ramban all the way back from, you know, the 12th century. Saw the original printing. It's in England. It's in the library. It's got a huge thing, and it's in a glass case and everything. He saw that piece in that part. He saw it within that original thing, and he went to Rav David Feinstein. And he asked Rav David Feinstein, I've seen it. It's not a forgery. So Rav David told him, Rav Moshe holds, that's a forgery. That itself must be a forgery. It wasn't him that wrote it. There's no way the Ramban wrote it, because there's no way that you could say that Avraham Avinu had a chait. The pshat is that you can't imagine what a chait is to these people. These people are beyond a chait. There's nothing to it. And the exact same thing goes, Likvodim Shol Yisrael, for the covenant of Bnei Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu hinted it to them. Guys, I know you had reasons for it, but Lamaisa, you sinned. You did the wrong thing. You did something wrong, and for that you deserve Musar. So he said it in a way that they understood. You guys did something wrong, but I'm going to be machas your chait. I'm going to cover it up, and I'm not going to tell you exactly what it was. That's the idea behind it. Even though you had sibas, even though you had reasons, that's it. That's the idea behind the Rashi, and that's the pshat behind it. And that's why Rashi says in the second Rashi, the people get up there and they said in the shuk, oh, that's because you were there. If we were there, we would have said like this. Why would they have such azas? Why would they say that back to Moshe Rabbeinu? Because they did have good reasons. They did have really good reasons. They thought that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to them and said to them, or they would have thought, those people weren't there, they would have thought that they would have said, that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to them and said, you guys did the Egel Azov, you guys are a bunch of idiots, I can't believe you did the Egel Azov. And they would have gotten up and they would have said, what do you mean we did the Egel Azov? We didn't do the Egel Azov, we just didn't give them Musar. We thought that there was the Erev Rav and there was this, and we had all these good reasons for it. You couldn't tell us that we just did that. They would have gotten up and spoken. But when they heard Moshe Rabbeinu, every single person was there, and they heard how Moshe Rabbeinu put it, that Moshe Rabbeinu did not say straight out, you guys did the Egel Azov. He said, V'dizahav. There was a lot of gold, and in the end, an Egel Azov was made. They saw, he's not directly saying we did something wrong, but he's indirectly saying, from what we did, something got messed up. Something got screwed up because of what we did. That's the idea behind how he gave Musar, and that's the best way to give Musar. To not go up to a person and say, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you did something wrong, to go up to a person and say it that way. You do it in a hinting way, and that's the only way to do it, and that's what Adam Rishon was saying. The Chassam Sofer says that's the reason why you will never see, how long were Bnei Yisrael in the desert for after the Meraglim? How many years? 39 altogether. 39 years altogether. But you will never see the word 39 referring to the years that they were in the desert. It's always 40. And in fact, whenever it mentions the 39 malachos, when it mentions the 39 malachos, it's always mentioned in Chazal as 40 minus 1. Arboim chasar achas. It's always that way. Why is it arboim chasar achas? Why don't we mention the 39? It's always mechasa the chait. We're hiding around the chait. Even the Meraglim had tremendous reasons for them. There were crazy reasons what the Meraglim wanted. As we went through seven of them when we went through Parsha Shlach. They had reasons for what they were doing. They weren't dumb. They weren't stupid. They didn't do a chait. They did something which was wrong in the end, but they had great reasons for it. So we're mechasa the chait. We hide it. We cover it up. And we say, okay, they did something that was considered something wrong. However, they had great reasons for it. And thus we say it as 40. We're mechasa. We cover it up. Let's go to another thing. The Lavan. Lavan. I found this year. Unbelievable piece from Rav Wolfson. I had extra time, so I was like, why not? I was in the hospital on Sunday, so I did a lot of sparring. So I just pulled in a bunch of sfarim that I would never do otherwise. So I pulled them to Volson and Munisi Techa. He says an unbelievable word on Lavan. Tovel v'Lavan refers to the mun. They complained about the mun. Rashi says, the thing that was white. They complained, oh, this thing's white. What's wrong with white? I like white. I'm wearing it. I'm good with white. What is the problem with the mun that they looked at the mun and they said, oh, I can't deal with this white food. I love marshmallows. I love anything. I like milk. I like these things that are white. Why in the world did they complain? And why would they complain about the fact that it was white? Why that over anything? anything. You couldn't think of a better complaint. Why white? Where did that come from? The reverse racism could be a one answer. It's a very bad answer. But the other answer that's given is, why they complain about that over anything else? Lovin always stands for chesed. He goes into a whole serious thing. I'm not into that sort of thing, although we will do something similar later on. Don't worry. But lovin is supposed to stand for chesed. We all know black and red is like midas hadin, and it's supposed to be like blood or like evil, and like black is always like, you know, Voldemort is black, and it's just kind of the Harry Potter, and Harry Potter is also black because he's a magician, whatever. But he's like a lighter black, and there's differences. You know, and then there's white. White is always supposed to be the innocence. There's always the good guys are wearing white, the bad guys are wearing black or red, or, you know, like all those, the different colors, the darker colors, you know? So why is love on chesed? Adam's curse made us work for all of our food, made us work for everything. We should plow the ground, work the ground, and do everything in order to get our food from the ground. But we know there are certain times when we don't have to work the ground, and yet we get the food for free anyway. For example, you all have had it when you were a baby, I hope. I mean, unless somebody was born straight, that would be cool. But if you were born as a baby, when you were first born, you had milk from your mother. That milk is white. The chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a person to immediately get all the food that he could possibly need in the world, every little bit of nourishment from your own mother. And not only that, but in a makom bina, the place of bina, the place of understanding. And we all know that there's bina yisir within a woman. It's the perfect place for a person to be able to feed. That place is an unbelievable place. And for it to be white, pure chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to show a person that I'm only showing you the purest kindness in the world, and thus, it's all white. Thus, it's all white. So too in the midbar. The whole idea behind the mun is that the people didn't work at all to get this mun. At the most, some of them had to walk outside in order to get the mun. But it was no ishtadlus whatsoever. They didn't work. They didn't have to go out and get money or pay for anything. All they did was they automatically got everything for free without any ishtadlus at all. Thus, the mun is white. Stands for chesed. Stands for the chesed of Hashem, that even though they didn't need to do anything at all, Hashem still gave it to them out of pure chesed, and it's white. The third thing that goes through is Moshe Rabbeinu next week is going to ask for a matnas chinam. He's going to ask for a gift for free. And he mentions, bring me in to Har HaLevanon. Go to the place of the Beis HaMikdash. He's asking for a free gift, and he calls the Beis HaMikdash by the name of Lavan, of Levanon. He calls it by white because whiteness is a sign of chesed. Give me the chesed. Give me the whiteness. Give me everything that I could possibly have. And then it goes on to the final two things. He goes on and he says one thing, and that's why during the 9 days, we only eat milk. We only drink milk or milchic foods. The pshat is, white is milchics. Milchic stands for all the chesed that we should have during these 9 days. It's days of takuf adin, where din is down upon us, where the sultan wants to kill us, where there's blood and guts everywhere, and all the terrible things have happened to us during these days. Beis HaMikdash destroyed, all the terrible things have always happened. And these days, bedavka, we should have chesed. And that's why we have white. And that's also why on Shavuos, this is my addition, that on Shavuos, we have milchic foods, because the whole pshat on Shavuos is that we got the chesed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the chesed of the Torah. He gave us the Torah for free. It was a matnas chinam, and was given to us for no reason whatsoever. We got it anyway, and thus we eat milchiks to represent that, to say that we got the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu going for us on that day. That's the pshat behind us. The muster was to Bnei Yisrael, it was pure chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was pure whiteness, and yet you still complain? That was the muster. How could you do that? But obviously Bnei Yisrael had the great reason. You know what the reason was? The exact same reason as Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon didn't want to live like a Nebuch. He didn't want to live like a baby. We didn't live like people. We didn't live like babies our entire lives. God made us be able to grow up and to be able to stop drinking milk from our mothers and to be able to work for our food and to go out and get our food. Adam Rishon felt like he was a little baby. He's a little baby. Kadosh Baruch Hu was giving him, here, you can have whatever you want. All you have to do is reach up and get it. That's all you have to do, like a baby. All it has to do is cry. Then all of a sudden, I'll give you any food you want. I don't want that. I want to work for my food. Don't just give me a free gift. I want to work for it. I want to work hard for it. Don't give me something that you just think like, I'm a Nebuch. I'm a little guy who can't do anything, so I give you like a little Nebuchy job. Okay, just look at the floor over there and I'll give you $500. I don't want something like that. I want to actually feel like I deserve the reward that I'm getting. I want to really work for it and get my reward. That's the idea behind it. I know some people don't think that way, but that means you're still a baby. You still want that stuff for free. That means you're still on the level of a baby who's just like, I just want to work for myself for free. I see Avi's nodding his head very, very, very quickly. Yes, 100%. There are people that are like that. But the idea is not supposed to be that way. That's not the way of the world. And if you were there, you would have felt the exact same way, and you would have done like Adam Rishon. It wasn't just a stamachet of, oh, I'm going to pull fruit off the tree. You would have done the exact same thing, and the exact same thing happened over here with the mun. When they got the mun, they said to Hashem, we want to work for it. We don't just want to get this stuff. We want to work for it. We want to work hard for it. We want it to be out there, and for us to really, really really, like, try. Do some ishtaglus to get out there and to work for something. Not just get this month for free. That was their problem, and that's why they started to complain. That was their entire reason. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, I know that was your reason. I know the problem was the love on. But you did it anyway. And it was stupid of you. You should have done it in a different way. That's the idea behind the love on. That's number two. The Dizahav. The last one stands for, the Dizahav refers to, what? The Egel Azov. Why is the Egel Azov last? It was the very first thing they did. That should have been the first thing up there. I realize Mol Suf might be a little bit earlier. But still, it's the first thing that they did over any of the others. And the Egel Azov is supposed to be any chait that we've done always has a little bit of the Egel Azov inside it. So what's shot behind that? What does that mean? That there's a little bit of the Egel Azov inside it. What does that mean behind any chait that we do that there's something inside it that we did wrong? So there's a really good shot from the Chassam Sofer, and it's very similar to what we've been saying. At Matan Torah, we know Bnei Yisrael were free from the Yetzer Hara. They didn't go to the bathroom. They didn't have to eat. They basically didn't have to drink. They didn't have to do anything at all. They were free from everything. They were just free to learn and do nothing else. But everything was chosen once they did the Egel Azov. Once they did the Egel Azov, everything was messed up. However, Chazal say the Luchos were only known as Luchos HaBris up until the Egel Azov. Luchos HaBris is because how many mitzvos did they get with the first Luchos? Tuf Resh Yud Beis Bris. They got 612 mitzvos. They were missing one. That's a big mitzvah that they were missing. Anybody know? Come on, take a guess. There's one mitzvah that you can only do if you screw up. Shuva. They're missing it. They didn't have the 613th mitzvah. It was impossible. So they had the Luchos HaBris. After the Egel Azov, they were able to give themselves Shuva. And we know, Gedola Bali Shuva, that Bali Shuva are greater than regular people. That a Bal Shuva can become on a higher level than a regular person. That the Makum that said, Ikim Omdimba, Bali Shuva are able to get much, much higher. If that's true, then after the Egel Azov, if they do Shuva Shlema, they can get to a higher level. So maybe, the whole reason why they did the Egel Azov, was to bring themselves to a higher level. But that means that after the Egel Azov, what would they have to do? They'd have to do Tshuva Shlema. Once they started messing up after that, that proved to God that they didn't do it for Tshuva Shlema. So because the Egel Azov was a great idea, let's do the Egel Azov, let's see if we can improve on ourselves and make ourselves even higher. Great idea! Unbelievable idea! You can do that if you know what you're doing, if you're a tzaddik, if you're Svi Zimmerman, then that would be a very, very messed up thing to do. Do a chait in order for yourself to do tshuva on it? No, bad idea. You just messed yourself over. You're going to Gehenna. But for them, it was a great idea. We're not going to go to Gehenna. We're going to go all the way up to Gehenna. We're going to go to the highest level. The same type of idea of, oh, we're Nebuchs. We don't get tshuva. I want to do tshuva. I want to do a chait and be able to knock myself down and be able to do tshuva. So they did it and messed it up. And thus every chait brought them down lower and lower and lower. And every chait we do brings us farther and farther away from that original state of what we were before the Egel Azov happened. Thus, Egel Azov is last. The Egel Azov was only a chait after all the other chatayim happened. But beforehand, it wasn't a chait at all. It was a mitzvah to do because they brought about tshuva. But after everything happened, and Hashem saw you screwed up here and here and here and here, the Egel Azov was a big mess up by you guys. It was the worst thing you could have done at the time. It was a big avera, and you messed up because of that. By the way, that might be the reason. I don't know if I wrote it down over here. I didn't write it down over here. Oh well. Okay, we'll get to it. Kiamishpat lelukimu. Turn to, if anybody has a Chumash in front of them, Kiamishpat lelukimu is mentioned within the judges. Talks about the judges over here. It says, the judgment is for God. It's in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Lo sekiru panim mishpat kakotan, etc. Kiamishpat lelukimu, the judgment is for God. The question everybody asks is, judgment is not for God. We know lo ba shamayim hi. That if God comes down from shamayim, if God would, he won't. But if he does, he comes down and he lets out a voice and he says, it's asur. We don't listen. We can go right back up to God and say, no, it's not. We can stay right back up to him. Now, why? How does that work? If God would do that, why does that work? And there are Gemaras. There's a Gemara about Baharis, about a certain type of Tsaras, in which the Malachi Asharis had a Machlokis with Hashem, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Malachim held one way, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu held another way. And the Rambam Paskins like the Malachim. As usual, by the way, the Rambam always does something which throws you off. All the time. The Rambam throws you off to the wrong way. Why would you not Paskin like God? And what are the going to do? The Malachim. What are you going to argue? The Malachim are going up in front of God. No, no, no. We think it's this way. I wrote it. I know what's true. I am the world. You know, like all he has to do is like look at them and just be like, you're not here. You no longer argue on me. I'll just make a bunch of Malachim that agree with me. What's the idea of arguing against the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Because there's an idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is too far up to be able to understand what life is like for us. Now, we understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows every single person. He has the true emes. He has the din emes, and everything's up there. However, we paskin according to what we can understand. If we can't understand it, if it's too high for us, that's not our psak. That's not our psak halacha. That's why we never, ever paskin like Reb Meir. Reb Meir was one of the smartest tanoim of all time. He was one of the greatest tanoim out there. But we can't paskin like Reb Meir because he was too smart. He was too wise. We had no idea what he was talking about. He said something and he gave a svara, and we're sitting there like, what? And Reb Meir's like, yeah, it makes sense to me. Yeah, it makes sense to you, but it doesn't make sense to us. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkness was one of the greatest tanoim of all time. But he got put in cherem because nobody could understand what he was saying. He kept saying, it's Torah, it's Torah, it's Torah. And everybody's like, no, it's Tameh. They put him in cherem because Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkness was too bright, too high for everybody else. So how does that work? So especially over here, Kiam Mishpat Elokim, God is, the judgment is for God. What's the pshat? So Chazal say, it tells us Hashem is with the judges. So it's an unreal story from the Amud Ya'esh. It's a sefer all about Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. Yeshua Leib Diskin. It's actually brought, the way I found it was originally, it was in the Likutei Pshatim 2 years ago. Nobody ever reads it. Sometimes there's a gold mine inside there, but like, nobody will ever know. You're just looking at the back the whole time. But there's Torah in the front. You'd never know. But it's there. You just have to read it. So once in a while, you see a board and you'll just be like, this is the greatest board ever. So Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin had a brother, Reb Avram Diskin. Reb Avram Diskin was a dayan in a certain place all the way up, whatever, in Europe. And a couple people came to him for a certain din in a certain matter, and they didn't like the din. They didn't like the halacha that he gave them. They didn't like the psak din. So they went to another dayan in Brisk, an elderly dayan in Brisk, and they didn't tell that elderly dayan that they had already gone to Rabbi Avram Diskin. They didn't tell him already, because otherwise, you know, the dayan can't do anything at all. They didn't tell him, and the dayan came up with a different ruling, came up with a different halachic ruling. So the guy said, oh, we went to Reb Avram and Avram said that, and the guy said he made a mistake. It's a Mishnah that says like me. And the elderly dayan got into a big fight with Reb Avram Diskin. Reb Avram Diskin wrote to his brother Reb Yeshua Leib, who was living in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim at the time, and said to him, help me out. So Reb Yeshua Leib Diskin wrote to him. He wrote back and he said to the elderly dayan in Brisk, he wrote to that elderly dayan and said, listen, I know that the halacha, the way you heard it, was exactly that, and everything was good according to what you heard. However, Hashem is always with the dayanim. So I know that when my brother originally heard this question, the way they worded it to him, Hashem was with them, and there was emes involved, and everything was all good, and my brother got the correct psak, even though it might not have been the correct psak had it been told in a different way. When they came to you, it already wasn't emes. It wasn't a true din anymore. It was just a couple people speaking over what's the halacha. That's like a couple people speaking over in a Gemara. Hashem wasn't with that, and because Hashem wasn't with that, therefore you came up with a halacha, and your halacha might be right, but it doesn't apply to this situation. My brother had God with them in that situation, and God paskin that it was all right. That's what we can paskin like God. If the psak that comes out from over here, now that's very, very dangerous, because you could go up to any dayan and be like, oh, that's God. And you could just say, like, whatever he says is 100% true, which isn't always the case. Sometimes the dayan does make mistakes. However, we got to treat it, and the point of this story is to treat the words of the dayan as if it's mamish, the word of Shemayim, as if this is God speaking to us. Why? Because when you go up to him, you have to know Hashem is with the dayan, ki amishpat leilo kimhu, and God gets involved, and God makes sure that even if he messes up in something that was supposed to happen that way. It was supposed to happen that way. It's a very, very hard concept, but that's where Yeshua Leib Diskin's chiddush over here. That's a huge, huge chiddush. Now, this is going to hit home on a couple people. I like this a lot because it is a little musri, but nonetheless, it is it's something that you got to hear, especially for stuff in America. Pinula chem tzafona in Perik Beis Pasuk Beis. By Yemar Shem Elai Lamor, it says Vav lachem sov zahar zeh. You've been around Edom too long. Pinula chem tzafona. Go up north. So it's a weird wording of pinula chem tzafona. What does that mean by pinula chem tzafona? So Avad, it means get away from Esav. That we understand. Okay, get away from Esav. I understand that. But the Kli Yakar says it's all metaphorical. The Kli Yakar took over from the Maharal in Prague after the Maharal was Rebbe. When the Maharal passed away, the Kli Yakar took over for him. He wrote a Sefer on Chumash. He was one of the great Talmidim of the Maharal. If you ever want to hear the craziest story you've ever heard before in your life, read about what happened to the Kli Yakar when the Sultan was trying to get him. He went through a whole process of getting away from the Sultan. Awesome story. It's tape number 1, 2, and 3 in the Hasidisha story tapes. It's like some guy talking really slowly on a tape. So you just put it in like fast forward and it sounds awesome. And it goes really, really quick. And the greatest stories ever. But number 1, 2, and 3 is the story of the Kli Yakar and how he went to the mikvah and the whole mikvah burned. Crazy stuff. Anyway, the Kli Yakar says an awesome word. It's all metaphorical. Yishmael and Esav are always, always jealous of us, of everything we do. You can see it everywhere. You can see it in Israel. As soon as we started getting Israel, as soon as Israel became like a real land, all of a sudden the people get up there. Oh, it's our land. Christians come back. All of a sudden the Arabs come back. Everybody comes back. Oh, it's our land. We want the land. The Christians are laying low. It's only because the Arabs are there. Soon enough, you know, something's going to happen and they're going to come right back up and they're going to be like, it's our land. It always happens. Hollywood, we took over Hollywood. Come on, let's just, we got it on tape. I mean, it's true. We took over Hollywood. We have everything. We have the stock market. We own the stock market. Basically, we are the most richest, successful, greatest people of all time. And obviously, because of that, then people are going to be, I mean, we just don't fit everywhere. Whenever you look at something, I was just talking about this today. JUF, like the Jewish United Fund, do you know how many services they have? They're just the most ridiculous services in the world. Like they have for the elderly, they have for the children, they have for the 20-year-olds, for the 21-year-olds, for the 22-year-olds, for the 23-year-olds. They have all these services and programs. They have like 3,000 programs for anything you can think of. Like if you broke a nail, you have a service. It's started by the JUF for those people who broke a nail on the right finger, the fourth finger. You have to call up a certain number and it's there. We are the most ridiculous people of all time and somebody's funding it. That means there's some rich guy who's sitting there like, all right, I already sponsored 15 zoos. Now what I do with my money? I'll do something for, I don't know, nail reclamation or something like that. I have no idea, but I'll start it up. There's only the Jews can think of stuff like this and they get jealous and they start saying things like, oh, they took over. And that's what happened in Germany. We all know that they said, oh, they're taking over the economy, which we were. And they're saying they're taking over this and taking over that, which we were. And they were saying that eventually a Jew might become president. Well, it's not so far from the truth, although Bloomberg is not the type of name you want as the president. Schwartz would be a lot better. But you'd have something in which you have somebody, where a Jew would go all the way up to the top. It's going to happen. What happens to us every single time is that we got messed up. We got messed over. And all of a sudden, they all come up against us. The Eitzah is, the advice is, says the Kli Yakar, Pnu Lachem Tzafona. Go out for yourselves and Tzafun. What does Tzafun mean? Hide yourselves. Put yourselves behind everyone and don't show your faces. Don't go and buy the most ostentatious cars and houses and everything out there. Don't do those stupid things and make yourself so far out there so that people look at you and say, that's a Jew. Because then you just look stupid and everybody, of course people are going to be jealous of you. If you stand out there and you look down at other people and you say to yourself, well, yeah, I'm Jewish. Of course I'm supposed to be rich. Of course. Then of course people are going to look at you and say, like, what in the world? I still remember when my wife started working in a place called Alberto Culver. And she was working in part of the marketing thing. And all the people that were with her, excuse my language, were all white trash, living in trailers and whatever. And when my wife told them that we have two sets of dishes, Blaschik's and Milchik's, and they're like, we use paper and wash them. They were like, what? Do all Jews have that? And we're like, my wife was sitting there like, you mean you don't have sets of dishes? You mean you don't pay for private schooling? You mean you don't have this and that? They're sitting there and they're just like, you pay for private schooling, you have two things. You have Chagim, in which you pay $750,000 at Jewel. Jewel runs just on one Jew. And you go, you have all supermarkets that get sold out in Pesach, and you guys still have money? Where does it all come from? It's, if you think about it, it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. Where does our money come from? And yet we have tons of it. And of course, okay, you'll hear the thing, you'll hear the statistic, like 60% of the school is on scholarship. Of course they are! They have 15 kids there! There's a reason why they are. In that case, it's Pnu Lachem Tzafona. The only thing you can do is hide yourself, put yourself behind everybody else, and just say, instead of making, you know what, I'm just going to make a block, and I'm going to just make that my entire house. Instead of doing that, you own something small, and you just say, this is what's going to be mine. This is what will be mine, and nobody will notice that you're a Jew. I mean, they'll see the kippah, they'll see the tzitzis, they'll see everything, and they'll see your nose, they'll realize you're Jewish, but they won't think that a Jew is going to be any different from anybody else. They just have big noses, got something strange on their head, and they're like white and black. It's all good, and I mean by the tzitzis, by the way, not only the white and black of white, but okay. Anyway, But that's the idea, that the idea is for them to look at us and just say, not be jealous of our successes like they have been. And that's the idea of Bayim Pivnu Lacham Savona. Why not give them Esav, they go around, Ammon, they go around, Moab, they go around. Why not just go there? Beat them down. Destroy them. What's the big deal? Just take them, wring their necks, kill them all. We're all good. And aside from that, Avram was already promised their land. It's the Cani, Kenizi, and Kadmoni. These are the lands that were promised in the times of Mashiach. What happened that all of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, no, not now. Save them for later. I want to save them for dessert. For now, you're going to get seven nations. Those three are going to come back later. What's up with that, and why that over anything else? Oh, there's Rav Wolfson. We don't have enough time for it, though. We don't have enough time. No, you're going to want the other two war. Okay, if you want to see a really good one, there's Rav Wolfson, and then I have a whole shot in it, and that goes back to the seven things that we mentioned. There's seven things over here, seven sins. There's another three in Baal Oscha. Those other three are connected to three nations that will get lost at Lavo. Oh, whatever. We're all good. Anyway, that's the backward nuns. Anybody get? Okay, we'll get to that later. Anyway, Chaf Gimel. I love this board beyond, by far, I don't want to say my favorite, because everything's my favorite board, but one of my best boards that I ever like to say at any time. There we go. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. The Pasuk says at the at the end of Perek Beis, it says Pasuk Chaf Gimel talks about how Sichon's coming up against them, and he's a huge giant, and they're all scared. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Moshe tells them, Ba'avim Ayoshim Bachatzerim, the Avim that live in the open fields, Ad Aza, up to the place of Aza, Kaftorim Ayotim Mikaftor, Yishmidum Vyeshvu Tachtam. The Kaftorim that come from Kaftor destroy them and live instead of them. Now that's great. A history lesson is always in place. I love history lessons. They're tremendous. My dad gives them to me every time I go over to the house, and it bores me. But the fact is, I don't need it now. I don't need to know who the Kaftorim are. I don't even know who the Avim were. What's up with these people that we have to mention over here? Says the Rashbam, the reason why he says this is because Hashem is showing them, I can do anything at any time. I can even make the Kaftorim beat the Avim. Thank you, Mr. Rashbam. What are the Avim and what are the Kaftorim? Says the Chidah. Puts down a crazy sefer from who knows where. The Avim is mentioned in Chulin, Daf Samach Amud Aleph, as being a people that were massive, massive giants. They used to move the ground whenever they walked. They used to make sort of plates in the ground move. They used to make like earthquakes when they walked. They were huge, massive giants. The Kaftorim are a people mentioned in the Medrash and Noach as being midgets. Now there's a Gemara in Bechoros that says when midgets get together with midgets of another type, so those midgets getting together with other midgets give birth to finger people, tom thumbs, tiny little people that are the size of thumbs. So these little tiny thumb people were kaftorim, hayotzim mi kaftor, were midgets that came from other midgets. These were little tiny people. They went up against the Avim, against these massive giants, and they destroyed them. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, you're worried about Sichon. I had these little tiny midget people, they're not midgets. Midgets at least were a foot tall. These tiny thumb people, these finger people, people the size of fingers, just destroyed an entire nation of giants. And you're saying the world's not in my hands? Or are you going to say there was a nuclear bomb? There was no nuclear bomb. The kids just went up, these tiny little guys, and they just were like ants jumping up around the giants. The giants stop it. You're in my nails. Ah! Just sitting like that, and they destroyed a whole nation of giants with these tiny little people. You don't think I can do anything? You guys are afraid of Sichon? What are you worried about? Says the Rashbam, that's the pshat behind this entire thing over here. Alright, that's that. Og. I love Og. How big was he? So, we know the Gemara in Brachos, Nundal Rama Beis, and I told it over to the kids in camp because it's always the best story. He lifted up a mountain on top of Bnei Israel that was the size of the entire Bnei Israel, which is three parsos by three parsos. Just to let you know, that is give or take about 7.5 miles long by 7.5 miles. I don't know if anybody's lifted up a rock the size of a mile before. 7.5 miles by 7.5 miles is large. That's big. That's a huge mountain. He lifted up on top of his head. These huge ants came and destroyed the mountain. It fell down on top of his head. His teeth grew out into the mountain, so he couldn't take the mountain off his head. Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos tall, took a sword that was 10 amos tall, and jumped up 10 amos into the air, and nailed him in the ankle. How tall was oak. So by that definition, I did a whole equation and everything. 30 amos until your ankle. If you were 30 amos until your ankle, you go all the way up until the top of your head. If he was a normal-sized human being, which he wasn't, but if he was a normal, you know, person, would be 720 amos. Give or take, that's about 1,100 feet. That's the size of the John Hancock Building, not including those two antennas that go all the way up. That's huge. That is massively huge. Impossibly huge, almost. What does that mean that he was 720 feet tall? Now, Vade, 720 amos tall. Vade, Vade, there is a pshat. I never want to go with the thing and say that there's no pshat behind it. I don't know what pshat is in this exactly. Yes, the Tiferes Yonas and Rav Yonas and Eifshitz has a whole piece on how to make a giant. you thought they were just born from giants. No, you can make them. So there's a whole thing on how to make them. You have to have it with the sun and the top of the sky and whatever. There's a whole thing. I unfortunately said part of it during an NCSY convention. Oh my gosh, you had kids coming up to me afterward like, how do you make... I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot. But whatever. But either way, there's a whole way of different making them and whatever. And the remez is definitely here. I mean, the way it words it over here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph, is it says, Halohi, it talks about his bed, another strange thing, and it says, Hinei Arso Eris Barzel, his crib was made of iron. Halohi Barabbas Bnei Amon, isn't it Barabbas Bnei Amon? Halo, says all the Rishonim, like the Rabbeinu Ephraim and the Panach Raza, they say, Halo is Hey Hey, it stands for 10, 5 and 5 is 10, because he was 10 almost tall. Lamed is 30 almost all the way up until the ankle. Okay, there's a bunch of Ramazim altogether. The Meshach Chachma, by the way, he asked, why do we have to mention about his bed? Halohi Barabbas Bnei Amon, isn't it over there by Bnei Amon? Maybe. Like, what are we testing? Like, why are we going into this? So he says, just like the Greeks used to worship Hercules and Zeus and all their weapons and the weapons of war, they used to take the weapons of war and they used to put it inside a place and they used to bow down to it and worship it, they worshipped Og. And you can imagine they would. He was 832 years old by the time he died. He was well over 720 almost tall. If you didn't worship him, you were either strange or you just didn't believe in giants. And you could believe in it if you saw him. So they worshipped it as if they worshipped him mamish as a god. That's why it says, Halo Yibarabas Bnei Amon. Don't the Amonim have a whole palace that's reserved for Og stuff? They have all of Og stuff there and they bow down to it all the time. That's how the Meshach Chachma puts it. Regardless, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said at the end, Ba'amas Ish. It was the Am of a person because it still was a person. But regardless, that's Og. How do we understand that? So first of all, the Rush does say that there's a Medrash that Abba Shol was running after a deer. And as he was running after a deer, he started running after the deer. And he ran after the deer, he says, for three parses. Three parses, again, is about 7 miles, 7.2 miles, something like that. 7 miles. And he realized he was in a rib cage for all 7.5 miles. He went out and he asked people, and he was told, that is the rib cage of Og. That's Og's rib cage. It's 7.5 miles long. Wait, it picked up a mountain that big, you would expect his rib cage to be at least that size. But regardless, that's absolutely huge. Obviously, that makes him a lot bigger than the John Hancock Building, but maybe he just got fatter when he died. I don't know. It could be one of the two. But that's number one. But he was brothers with Sichon. How he became brothers with Sichon is a big problem. If you say that he lived through the Mabul, if you say that it's a different Og, which the Das Kanim says, then everything's all good. But the Rabbeinu Bachaya yells at him like crazy in this week's Parsha. No way! Abade is the same Og. Of course it's the same guy. He lived for a long time. He had the discourse of Avram Avinu. So don't say that. There are six ways of answering up how Sichon and Og are related. Sichon and Og are related, how they're brothers from one another, even though Og survived the Mabul and Sichon supposedly didn't. Number one, Sichon did survive the Mabul. There's a rush in Parshas Noach that says when the Mabul happened, Og and Sichon were so huge, they stood on top of a mountain in Eretz Yisrael, and they were able to survive the entire Mabul. But they were the only people to have been able to survive. That's one medrash. That's one. Number two, Ham's wife. No, the water wasn't so bad because it was only up to the bottom of their feet. Number two, Ham's wife. Who is the father is another question. Either was Shamchazai, the king, the angel that came down from the sky, Achia, who's the son of Shamchazai, or it was Achia and Shamchazai together, which is strange to me. But either way, regardless, you have Shamchazai, Achia, or Achia and Shamchazai together, which is the Machlokis Rashi's all together. There's a Rashi, there's the Yalkut Shimoni, whatever, it's all mentioned. So either way, the first opinion is that they both survived the Mabul. The second opinion is that Ham's wife, either before she got on the Teva or after she was on the Teva, was raped by Shamchazai. Shamchazai got on the Teva. He was one of the Shadim that was brought in. It says Gama Behema, Gam includes the Mazikin. Shamchazai got on the Teva. He raped Ham's wife. Ham became impregnated, and that's why Ham had deal with his wife on top on the Teva in order to hide his wife's deed. But when the kid was born, and it was this massive giant named Sichon, they're all like, it's not yours. That's not your kid. So they figured out that it wasn't really his. That's number two. Number three, Noach's wife. I saw this in the Moshe of Zakenim. Noach's wife was either raped or it was Noach's second wife. Originally, Noach was married to Nama. After that, he married a second wife and brought her on the Teva, and she was already pregnant with Sichon, or Noach's son was Sichon. And Noach had a child after the Teva, and his name was Sichon. That's another very strange one. That's all mentioned by Moshe Zakenim. Number five is that Og himself, when he was saved, you know, he saved himself by jumping on the Teva, he saved his mother as well. And he was holding onto his mother with one hand. And he saved his mother. She was either pregnant with Sichon, or it's also brought down by the Paris Yosef that he was Baal Emo. He had deal with his own mother after the Teva happened, and that's how he was able to get there. So that's how Sichon was born. So either way, we have those six opinions. But either way, some of these things are just very, very hard to understand. So what goes on over here? Maybe we'll go into the Neshamos in a second, but I have my pshat. I've said this pshat a couple times already. I've had it for about 4 years, and I've told it over to some people, and they liked it. They liked it. It's not so off. The Me'am Louis quotes down a Midrash Rabbah that according to Rabbi Yochanan, he was 36 amos until his waist. How we understand the whole 30 amos until the what's it called, that Moshe Rabbeinu jumped up, we'll explain in a second. But he was 36 amos up until his waist. 36 amos until his waist. So that doesn't give him so high. I mean, 36 amos is large. That gives him about a height of altogether, let's just say he's 50 amos altogether. So that gives him a height of about 75 feet tall. But at least that's livable. You know, 75 feet, that's just like George A. Murison without the medicine. You know, that I can sort of like understand just a little bit, you know? So that's up there. That's something I can somewhat understand. More than 1,100 feet. Regardless, I don't want to say that that's not pshat. It could be he was that tall. But regardless, 75 feet is more understandable to me. More understandable to me. So number one, what's Moshe Rabbeinu afraid of that Hashem has to tell him, "Al tira," so don't be afraid of? Number two, what's Moshe Rabbeinu, what's Hashem telling him? Number three, he hit him in the ankle and he died? What is this, Achilles? Why in the world did he die from hitting him in the ankle? Number four, well, where is this ankle and what's he getting at? Why would he hit him there? Can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu like, "I'm going to go for whatever I can get," getting an ankle? Like, bad shot, you know? With Sichon, he aimed it and he was perfect. With Og, like, where was he? The idea is like this. We know that Og may have been Eliezer Eved Avram. That's another issue altogether, whether he was Eliezer Eved Avram, to figure out exactly what that means. That's Parshas Chayisara. We're not going to get to that now. Og lived by the time of Avram Avinu, and according to all Meforshim, he was Meshamish Avram Avinu. He was Meshamish Avram Avinu at one point. He had a bris milah. For sure if he was Eliezer, but even if he wasn't, he had a bris milah. We know that a bris milah is known as, what do we call that? We call it an oath. An oath bris. You always have an oath. The oath is referring to the bris. He was Matzliach from that bris, and the reason why he lived to 832 and maybe even more is because he had that bris milah on him. And that bris milah was so special, so holy, so high, that he was able to live for a very, very long time because he had the schus of the bris that was on him. So Hashem said, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was so afraid. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "How can I get him? He's got a bris milah. There's no way he was Meshamish Avram Avinu. This guy's a tzaddik. Og was not necessarily a bad guy. He was upset about his brother, but he has a tremendous amount of schus from what's it called? From Avram Avinu. So how do I know that I'm going to be able to beat him? How do I know that I'm the one? And plus, he's got malachim for ancestors. He has angels as his ancestors. How do I know that I'm going to be able to beat him?" Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Al tira oso." Don't be afraid of his oaths. Not don't be afraid of him. Don't be afraid of his oaths. Don't be afraid of the bris milah. Ki biyadcha nasati oso. Because in your hands, I'm going to give his bris. From those words, Moshe Rabbeinu darshan, what do I have to do? I have to hit the bris. I have to knock off the bris milah. By destroying the bris milah of Og, that gives him no longer any schus to live. So when Moshe Rabbeinu jumped up with the sword, he wasn't stopped. He was giving him another bris milah. He was giving him a new bris milah that would kill him. So he jumped 30 amos. Remember, he's 36 amos to the waist. 30 amos brought him to the place of the erva. And that's what he did. He hit that erva. He hit him ba'oso in that place, and he nailed him. What's with the Gemara that says that he hit him bipramastika? That means in his ankle. I have a Gemara in Nidarim on Chafon and Beis that says you're not allowed to look at a woman's ankle. Says the Gemara, we're not referring to the ankle. We're referring to the makom erva keneged ha'akev. The makom erva, which is right up from the ankle. If you look at the ankle and go up, you see the makom erva. So too with Og. Hitting him in the ankle was a nice way of putting the fact that he hit him in the makom erva samach la'akev. The makom erva Erva, which is right there. So he nailed that Erva. He got the place, which is right by the Akiv. He nailed that place right there, giving him that bris mila, the second bris, so to speak. Destroyed Og, because Og no longer had a schus to live. He no longer had a bris mila. He no longer had that bris mila. And he learned it out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I found today, the Pardes Yosef says it almost, not the whole board. There's a lot. The Pardes Yosef says, the pshat behind Og and why he lived so long is because he had a bris mila. He says it exactly that. And then he says, the way for Moshe Rabbeinu was to get rid of him was to take away the schus of the mila. Take away the schus of the mila. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu had to do. Now he goes into another direction altogether, but the idea is the same. Taking away the bris mila was exactly what he was doing over here. That's the idea. Now, last thing, I know I'm a little bit late, but you got to hear this. Bashan, he was the king of Bashan. Where does he get Bashan from? Bashan is Shimon ben Nisanel. Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel is the Nitzutz Gilgal of Og. Og had inside him the Kedusha of Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel. Says the Seder Adoros, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to go anywhere near Og because he had the Nitzutz. He was the Neshama of Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel. And because he had the Kedusha within him, maybe that Kedusha was going to make Og live. So he didn't want to go anywhere near him. However, does anybody know Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel? He is known as, he's one of the five Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's buried right by the Rambam, right by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I was just zocher to be by his kever not too long ago, about a month ago. He's buried right there along with Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis, Rabbi Yoshua. Well, Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis was in Cherem. He's buried far away. Rabbi Yoshua, along with Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, he's buried there. And Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel is known as the Yirei Chet in the Pirkei Avos. He's known as the fearer of sin. Thus, Al Tira Oso, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't be afraid of his Yiras Chet. Don't be afraid of that Yiras Chet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's Shapian Bashan, and says the Ben Ish Chai, an unbelievable little piece over here, the Nitzitz was, that you don't have to be afraid. Oh, and he's Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu had a Nitzitz within Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That was another thing altogether. That's why he has to be a Talmid. Either way, the remez of the Shein, of the teeth sticking out into the mountain, says the Ben Ish Chai, why do you need the teeth sticking out into the mountain? Why not just have the mountain stick on top of his shoulders and he couldn't get it off? Just have super glue there. Why does it have to be the teeth going out? Shein is Shin Nun, Nitzutz Shimon, or Nishmas Shimon, or Shimon Nisana, whatever you want to say, it says the Ben Ish Chai. Regardless, it refers to the Shein, refers to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, I'm going to take away the Nitzutz out of Og, it'll be thrown out of Og, the whole thing will be taken out, his Nishama will be taken out, that Nitzutz will be taken out, and will be brought back later. So you don't have to worry about destroying his Kedusha. His Kedusha will be reserved for later on when he becomes better. So that's why the teeth went out, the Shin Nun, Shimon Ben Nisana went out and stuck themselves into the rock. The rock, by the way, three parsos and three avos, there's a whole thing behind that and why it's the rock and whatever it is. That's what ended up happening, and that's when he realized there's a koach that he was going to be able to do, and thus he was able to get him. And the one bit of Kedusha that he had, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get him in that one bit of Kedusha and saw that the Kedusha was gone and be able to destroy him and take away the other little bit of Kedusha he had, the bris mila, and everything was all good. That's the idea behind Oak. Okay, we're going to stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.